We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is a TGIF end of the work week edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you live on this October 25th only. On 103.7 The Game, Ben Love and the famous Clint D. I know, plenty of rain outside. It's wet everywhere throughout Acadiana, but we are as dry as we could be inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Only 2 hours of the good stuff today as we get you ready for Game 3 of the World Series. Let's launch right into LSU-Auburn conversation. I've got three big nuggets to share with you on this final day. The final descent toward the battle of the SEC West Tigers. You want to jump in? We'll be your Huckleberry. 706-0111. It's number two, LSU. Number nine, Auburn. And the game's still hovering around an 11, a 12-point someplace spread in favor of LSU. And I don't know that this will change it much, but it's worth filing away. According to Brandon Marcello, Auburn247.com, running back Booby Whitlow will travel to Baton Rouge. And it's been speculated all week long that Whitlow, he'll be out. Why do we speculate that? Well, even his head coach, Gus Malzahn, has said all week long in interviews, this is how we're going to play without him. This is what we're expecting without him. And so just like the Saints may not have some gamesmanship going on with the Drew Brees chess piece that they're moving around when it comes to fooling with the minds of the Arizona Cardinals, I wonder if this is anything more than gamesmanship, a morale play for his teammates, or if one of the SEC's more well-rounded backs in this 2019 season really will be a go. But I do think you should know that according to sources of Brandon Marcello over in the Yellowhammer State, Booby Whitlow is expected to travel with the team. Let's move it on. Something I'll be watching all game long. Former LSU defensive coordinator Kevin Steele, now at Auburn, versus current LSU offensive brain trust Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady. How's that battle go down? And we remember the Steele era in Baton Rouge. It didn't last terribly long. Frankly, it bridged the gap between John Chavis and Dave Aranda. Certainly LSU has upgraded there. And that's not a knock on Steele. Aranda, despite some of the issues this season, pretty widely regarded as one of the best defensive minds in all of football. But Kevin Steele's pretty SEC tried and true. He's pretty hardened in Southeastern Conference football battles. And I think he understands what he's going to come up against in this high-powered LSU offense, led by Joe Burrow. Understanding it, stopping it, two very distinctly different things. And so how does that proverbial chess match play itself out tomorrow inside Death Valley? And how much, if at all, will it matter that this rain we're experiencing, on again, off again on a Friday, how much will it matter if that rain continues to dump on us in South Louisiana throughout the evening? Already, I think we're experiencing less than expected, not supposed to maybe last and linger as long as expected, probably shuffling on over east toward Mississippi and Alabama by the time you get to 10, maybe 11 a.m. tomorrow, certainly well in advance of the 2:30 p.m. kickoff. So I think LSU is going to be all hands on deck, guns blazing, trying to play at warp speed. How's Kevin Steele's defense going to counter that? I think that's one of the more fascinating aspects of tomorrow afternoon's SEC West showdown. And my third point that I'll bring up, again, credit to Brandon Marcello, this is a really good nugget. Auburn has had noted second quarter lulls all season long. The Tigers / War Eagle / Plainsmen were woeful in the second stanza. They limped into halftime in the swamp a couple of weeks ago. Against Oregon, Justin Herbert and the Ducks quack, quack, quacked in the second half. Excuse me, the second quarter. It's been a trend. It's not just a developing trend. It's something that has kind of clung to Auburn all season long. So Gus Malzahn's group, they have a hard time finishing out the first half of ball games. On the other side, LSU, as you well know, roars and comes to life right before halftime. Think of the Texas game when LSU scored three straight possessions right before the half and was absolutely about to throttle the Longhorns before a third quarter comeback from UT. But in the Texas game, LSU was outstanding in the second quarter. Ditto for the Vandy game. You won't have to stretch your memory banks too far. Ditto for last week at Mississippi State. And so here's my question, given that lopsided type of trend. Auburn struggles in the quarter. LSU's been great. Just how lopsided can this ball game get by half in LSU's favor? That might tell the tale of how much Bo Nix is forced to do in the second half. We talk about this all the time on the program. There's what you want to do offensively, and then there's what you have to do. I promise you, Gus Malzahn does not want to have to trot Bo Nix out there to throw the football 60 to 70% of the plays in the second half. I guarantee it. And it doesn't matter how you try to script things or blueprint things. If Auburn falls behind, has another woeful second quarter, whether it's just Burrow and LSU's offense doing the damage, or it's a special teams, defensive score for LSU, a blunder and a turnover, doesn't matter how it happens. Doesn't matter how you get to C. Could be A plus B, could be A times B. Who cares? But if you get to that point, and you're basically in checkmate at halftime, I think there's no chance that Auburn keeps this thing close in the second half, having to go against a Dave Aranda defense that knows Nix is going to have to keep it in the air. So for me, three things that you need to know on this Football Friday leading into LSU-Auburn. Booby Whitlow expected to travel. If he's going to play, probably won't know that until game time tomorrow afternoon. Former LSU defensive coordinator Kevin Steele going against his old team, but with Newman in charge of the offense. He hasn't seen the likes of Ensminger and Brady together. Only on film so far, seven games into this regular season. Finally, Auburn, terrible trending second quarters this season. While LSU has been outstanding there, just how much of a factor will that be in tomorrow's ball game? We're all going to find out together. Great guest list today. In fact, in about 5 minutes, how about the director of recruiting for 24/7 Sports nationally? Steve Wiltfong will join the program. How shocking was the commitment from five-star tight end Eric Gilbert? And we'll get the drop on three big-time official visitors this weekend that are coming to Death Valley. Steve Wiltfong at 4:15. Justin Vincent, his normal spot in the lineup at straight up 5 o'clock. And coming off a huge win last night, probably clinched his first year varsity program, a playoff spot, at least in my book. Josh Fontenot from Southside High will be with us at 5:45. Before we sashay into our opening break of the program, I have to give a shout out to our good friend Darren Domang, his wife Tiffany. Congratulations on their firstborn child yesterday. Truly a blessed moment for their family. Of course, Darren and company and the family at Lafayette Roofing, we all salute them for the work they do for families, for businesses around Acadiana. But to Darren and to Tiffany, congratulations on your bundle of joy. Cal and Todd, 6 pounds, 13 ounces of pure Raging Cajun fan, was born into our community yesterday. That much I can guarantee you. All right, we are going to hit that break. And after this timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. Time to get knee deep in the world of recruiting. So quickly, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. He is the director of recruiting for 247 Sports nationally. Steve Wiltfong back with us. Steve, it's great to have you here. How are you this afternoon?
What's going on, fellas? A lot of excitement down there in Baton Rouge, inside the stadium, and certainly on the recruiting trail.
Just how shocking was it that five-star tight end Eric Gilbert out of the Georgia Marietta area committed? How shocking was that for you?
Well, it's one of the bigger surprises that's happened over the last decade, for sure. I think that LSU is a school that no one was really writing much about them being in the picture at all up until their official visit. They got the official visit. And I was kind of dotting my I's and crossing my T's leading up to Gilbert's decision, and checked in with some LSU sources and people that spent time with Gilbert on his visit in Baton Rouge, and wrote, hey, the Gilbert's mom was remaining in touch with the staff and hadn't been told no. It was a really good visit in front of a good atmosphere. You had the information in front of you, and you just didn't maybe believe it as much as the buzz with Alabama and Georgia, but certainly in hindsight now, it was there to be read, but it was certainly an absolute shocker.
Steve Gilbert is the nation's top-rated player at his position, a slew of talented receivers already in LSU's 22-commit class. What does it say about the effect of Joe Burrow in this offense and how it's translating into recruiting so far?
Well, Gilbert's a guy that was number one overall on at least two college recruiting boards as a guy that's just the biggest no-brainer in this class, guaranteed to meet his potential in college. And LSU already had arguably the best receiver class in the country alongside Ohio State, and now you add Gilbert to it, who's just one of the best pure pass catchers in the country. And LSU recruited him as a kind of that hybrid receiver mismatch potential. Anyway, I don't think that the words tight end were said too much. I think it's more just the offense and, hey, everybody can be a potential pass catcher in this Joe Brady, Coach Emsinger's collaborative scheme.
It's amazing.
Did I say the last name right?
Oh, yeah. You crushed it. Emsinger.
Okay. Good. Nailed it.
Hey, you got the sources down here. I knew you'd have that one.
Well, sometimes I just have to read it to myself, you know, and I type it out. But I've never really had to say coach's name out loud too often.
It's not like it's Boudreaux or Thibodeau, so that one's not as difficult. He is Steve Wiltfong. We got another few moments with the director of recruiting for 247 Sports. You mentioned a big weekend in Tiger Stadium. No question. Coming up tomorrow, and three big-time official visitors. If you don't mind, let's take them one by one. Zach Evans, five-star running back out of North Shore High School in Houston. LSU, obviously, pretty familiar with that high school. It's where Caleb on Chainsaw hails from. So your observations about Evans and maybe where he's leaning.
Well, my crystal ball was on Georgia in the summer heading into the fall. I felt really good about the Bulldogs' chances to land Zach Evans. But even at the LSU-Florida game, talking to a lot of prospects that were on campus, and even kind of leading up to that game, there's been a lot of LSU smoke around Zach Evans and his recruitment. I switched my crystal ball to foggy. I think LSU's in a really good spot for him. They always have been. They're in a good place proximity-wise. Obviously, the offense is rocking and rolling. He's very familiar with the staff. LSU's doing a good job recruiting him. I'm not going to go ahead and put him in the class yet, a class that 24/7 Sports ranks number three nationally right now, but they're in a really good place.
A couple of defensive ends will accompany Evans. We'll go next to Jordan Birch, Hammond High School in Columbia, South Carolina, another five-star, and he's in the backyard of an SEC school.
So here's one that's maybe kind of setting up in a similar fashion as Gilbert, in the sense that the schools that you've been talking about the most with Birch has been Clemson and South Carolina, along with Georgia and Alabama. And here comes LSU about to get an official visit from Birch, and it's another top 10 matchup. And there's just a lot of excitement around the program right now. And Birch isn't expected to make a decision anytime soon. When you're recruiting defensive linemen at LSU, you like your chances extra with the added bonus that Ed Orgeron just he's passionate about everything, but you know, we all know defensive line's got a special place in his heart, and so I'm interested to see where this thing stands coming out of it. And Jordan Birch and his mom coming to campus, that's a big time opportunity for the Tigers here.
All right, Steve, now it's my turn to try to get a last name right. BJ Ojulari, he's a Tennessee commit. There we go. And he's from Marietta High School as well, outside of Atlanta in the state of Georgia. What can you tell us about that young man, and do you feel that pledge to the Vols is pretty firm?
Well, I think that it was Tennessee and LSU down the stretch for him, and Auburn was maybe that third team in the mix. But I thought LSU was in a really good spot. Just Tennessee, Brian Niedermeyer was the lead recruiter for the Balls. He was our 24/7 Sports National Recruiter of the Year last year. He committed to Tennessee before the season. There was a lot of excitement about Tennessee coming into the campaign. I still think that there's a lot of optimism regarding Tennessee moving forward. But obviously, with BJ coming to LSU, the door's not closed this weekend. So, you know, we'll see what happens on the back end. But that's a guy that LSU's always coveted, and they've done a good job recruiting and getting him to campus. And there's a lot of good players on the board, man. LSU, all of a sudden, and LSU's always recruited well, top 10 class typically. But it's really starting to become the Roxbury a little bit. You got some blue chippers gathering in a line outside, nodding their heads. Who's that Orgeron and his staff going to let into the building, man? I really think that they're going to have to make some tough decisions maybe down the road with tight on spots, but maybe you got four or five spots and you got eight or nine blue chippers trying to grab them. Tough decisions for those guys in the football facility.
We're getting great national perspective on local recruiting from Steve Wiltfong on 103.7 The Game. Steve, who else is impressing you? What other team, maybe that you didn't expect to climb as high as they have so far, is doing some work in this 2020 cycle?
Oh, man. Just kind of opening up our commit list. Obviously, Clemson's got a really special class, especially with that front seven. I think some schools that maybe we're not used to seeing this high right now, Mac Brown in North Carolina sitting at number 18. They also have an outstanding defensive line haul. Headlining that, I think people were skeptical of the Mac Brown hire at first. I think it was compared to when he started putting his staff together, it looked more like the movie Space Cowboys. Y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
With Clint Eastwood and stuff. But man, these guys are getting it done on the trail. Georgia Tech's in the top 25 guys right now, and they got. The jewel of their class is a running back by the name of Jahmyr Gibbs, who I was talking with this afternoon. He's on his way to Baton Rouge right now, who we have ranked in the top 10 at his position nationally. He's leading the state of Georgia in rushing right now. A lot of high-profile programs coming in on him here this fall on senior tape, so don't let people tell you senior tape doesn't matter. And he's visiting LSU this weekend. But Georgia Tech recruiting really well. Purdue, back-to-back good classes under Jeff Brohm right now. Top 25 last year, sitting at 26 this year. And Herm Edwards, a similar deal out of Arizona State with Mac Brown in North Carolina. Arizona State's got a good chance to finish in the top 25. They're at 29 right now with quite a few of the West best still considering them. So those are four outside of the SEC market. And I know that your listeners, I know what it's like down there in SEC country with the passion. I don't need to talk about any of those programs. They're following it closely.
Steve, on the way out, a big picture question. You follow this racket so closely for years. LSU's had dynamite recruiters that have left for head coaching jobs, and nobody blames them. Larry Porter to Memphis, Frank Wilson to Texas San Antonio. And it's difficult sometimes to make that jump depending on the job that you leap to. I'll get your take on what that's like, and when these guys make these moves, they go from being so good in one role, they try to take on something else. I guess your two cents on when it's time to make that move and the situations that those guys leapt into.
Well, I think when those guys made those moves, and I can't really speak for them, and I didn't follow it all that closely at the time, but a lot of times it's a significant raise in salary, right? Plus you're getting your chance to run your own program as well, which is what a lot of these guys dream of. But look at LSU now. Coach Aranda is making over $2 million a year right now, right?
Yeah.
So he can't just take the Bowling Green job, you know? There was a time where the Bowling Green head coach made more than the LSU defensive coordinator. That time does not exist anymore. And Brent Venables at Clemson, these guys, the head coaching job that they probably have their eye on it comes with a little maybe more patience and things of that nature. But then when you land, you have a better chance of winning right away, too, because your school's got more resources.
It's a really good perspective. Steve, you know I appreciate the time. Enjoy your football weekend. Thanks again for doing this.
Guys, thanks for having me on. Big weekend. And all y'all listening, make sure you're on Go247 following Billy Embody, Shea Dixon, and Sonny Shipp and the guys, as they'll have it locked and loaded and covered from every angle. Thanks for having me on, guys. See ya.
He's Steve Wiltfong, and he's absolutely right. That's why we have Shea on every single week. That's why we love having Sonny and Billy when we can. Really is good to pick his brain. Some things there that I might come back to on the other side of this break. I also want to get into our sink or swim questions of the day. It's Friday. It is over-under time with LSU football. So after a brief timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Just a couple of shots to the gut there as we enter back in. Clint, of course, the high irony. You are leading the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge, at least amongst the quote-unquote celebrities. That is those of us who work here at this station and throughout the building at Delta Media. So I guess maybe I shouldn't make fun of you for not being the best. Currently, it's exactly what you are.
Exactly. Amongst the VIP standings, I think I'm like top 20 right now, last I checked, heading into a crucial week 8. And ironically, that's like a week after. Like, I actually missed a week of picks for some reason or another, but I'm still leading by a small margin.
Just a fascinating story. And yes, I appreciate the full update. So we made sure to get that in. And before I give you our over-unders, our sink or swim questions of the day, let me fit in this not so insignificant tidbit. Within the hour, Sean Payton was asked, "What's going on with you, Breeze? Just shoot it straight. Tell us the truth." Here's the exact quote. I want you to chew on this. I'm going all Saints in our final segment of hour number one. Payton said, and I quote, "He's limited, but will have a good plan." They are mind bleeping the you know what out of the Arizona Cardinals. Clint, I told you. The noise from Breeze Monday especially made me think, okay, this is just what he wants. It's not what the team wants. Tuesday through Thursday, I was more than a little scared. Okay, wait a minute. This is actually a concerted effort amongst them all. They're in cahoots here. They all want the man to play. They're going to allow this man to play. This is a bad idea. I think I've officially come full circle within the week. Now I'm back toward this just being mind games. And yeah, while Breeze maybe could play if this were a playoff type atmosphere, those type of implications, my gut tells me that this is more about mind games.
I would hope it's more about mind games, but you never know, because obviously Drew Brees is listed as questionable in the latest injury reports that came out, I believe, over the last like half hour or so. So
limited.
Yeah. Limited in
the difference between limited and questionable, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Exactly. It's very weird to kind of think about the difference between limited and questionable.
It's a fluid situation, man. Yep. And we'll discuss more from the Saints injury report at the end of this hour. But we have tradition Football Fridays on this program, and I intend to uphold them. We've got three the hard way over-unders coming at you.
Exciting and new.
Your sink or swim questions of the day, all over unders, all geared toward the LSU-Auburn game. Let's get right after it. I went Burrow TD passes last week. I set it at 3.5. Not a bad line. He threw 4. This week, I'm going back to passing yardage. Over under 1, Joe Burrow hits 350 yards passing. 350 is the number. Will it be over or under for Burbank Joe? Over under Pardue. Terrace Marshall returning from injury, over under 75 yards receiving. And this one's really trying to get you to think about the distribution in the passing game. Marshall's back. He certainly is one of the best big-bodied short yardage threats when you need to throw that quick slant. He can go up and get it in the end zone. And oh, by the way, he had 75 yards plus in all but one of the games when he was healthy. I think this is a healthy line to set. Terrace Marshall, over under 75 yards receiving. And finally, part three, let's go to the defense. LSU's defense, over under 1.5 turnovers cost. I'll run it down quickly. Burrow, 350 yards through the air. Marshall, 75 yards receiving. LSU's defense generates over under 1.5 turnovers. Call us. Let us know. Let's have some fun. 706-0111. Clint, since you're winning that whole pro pick-up thing and you're real proud of it, why don't you lead off here?
I'll start things off. And I like the first line a lot. I really want to say this one could be a push because I feel like 350 yards against an Auburn defense, if Joe Burrow's not under pressure this whole ball game.
An exact push. That would be really impressive for a number.
Yeah, it feels like this one probably, in my mind, it'd be a push, but for the sake of the over-under debate, I'm going to go over. I'll probably say around 355, 360 is be where kind of the barometer is
you
for me.
You are dialed into a really just finite zone here. I'm impressed with that. Okay.
And then when you look at Terrace Marshall's over under 75 yards receiving, I got to go over that. I probably can put him over 100 yards receiving.
Wow.
Some because of the fact that, you know, Coach O mentioned yesterday, the fact that he's going to be full go for this ball game. They're obviously going to monitor him, see how he's doing. But if he's as healthy as we think he is, he's going to wind up doing some really big things in this contest. So I got to go over 75 yards receiving for Terrace Marshall. The last one I've been kind of flip-flopping on over the last few minutes is because of how LSU's defense hasn't necessarily been the opportunistic type to get turnovers, but I am going to go over on this one because why not? Why not get the trifecta of overs?
So let me get this straight. Again, we'll take your calls now. Over under time, 706-0111. Last week, everything that you were feeding me was leading toward an LSU rout. And by and large, that's what we got. I understand that State scored a garbage touchdown late, but much of what you said came to fruition.
Yep.
Based off of everything that you're feeding me this week, it sounds like you've got LSU by an awful lot of points.
It feels like that's the way it's going to be. I mean, Auburn has not won a ball game inside Tiger Stadium in 20 years. I feel like that streak is going to continue.
Yeah, but they're usually close and wild. There's one exception. There's one really big exception that I can remember and I'll note on the program. I actually missed a friend's wedding in the Atlanta area to attend the 2011 LSU-Auburn game. That's the game where Jarvis Landry scared the entire Auburn kickoff team off the field by blowing people the you-know-what up, right? Special teams Jarvis Landry, before he became a full-out stud, scared Auburn off the field that day. It was a blowout. If memory serves, maybe like 41-17-ish, LSU crushed Auburn on that day. That's a rarity between these two. But you've got this one as, I would think, just based off what you told me, 3-score-plus game.
Exactly. I think that's going to be the way this thing goes. And you brought it up perfectly, Ben. You brought up the year, 2011, the LSU-Auburn game. What happened in 2011?
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
You know what happened in 2011?
Yeah.
LSU beat Alabama. You know what hasn't happened since? So maybe, just maybe, they're channeling some of that 2011 magic. Of course, if that's the case, cover your backside for January, whatever it is, of 2020.
Yeah, whatever the heck.
Things may go kaboom.
Whatever the heck that national title game is.
Let's just hope it doesn't really go down that way. All right, let me give you mine. You showed me yours. Joe Burrow. I got over 350 passing yards as well. I've been not skeptical, but I've just been careful. I've had a governor on some of my week-to-week enthusiasm when I set these numbers because I've also set these numbers at 375 in previous weeks. I'm setting it at 350. I'm going over because I am buying that Auburn is better in run defense than Florida was. And Florida faltering against the run is the only reason Burrow didn't light that ass up for about 450 yards. Seriously, that's the only reason. They went for 11 yards plus a play, and that included the run game. I think you're not going to be able to include the run game at that type of clip going against Auburn's better run-stopping defensive front. Burrow's going to have to carry the mail, and I think he's more than equipped to do it. I'm going over 350 yards for Joe Burrow. I'm going under 75 yards for Terrace Marshall. Yes, he was not in a gold non-contact jersey yesterday. Also, yes, Coach Ed Ogeron said yesterday he'll be a full go, but we will monitor as he plays. I think Marshall will be in there a healthy amount. I think that Derek Dillon has proven from his performance in the Auburn game last year, from what he did last week at Mississippi State, Dillon is carving out some more PT for this LSU offense. And there are some other pass-catching options that are starting to come to the surface, Thaddeus Moss certainly being one of them. So I think that there are a lot of mouths to feed. And while Marshall may have a big play or two in the game, I don't think the volume is going to be there. So I'm going under Terrace Marshall's 75 yards, his first game back. The Alabama game and the rest of November could be a different story for the healthy sophomore wideout from Bossier City. Finally, LSU over under 1.5 turnovers caused. This is the easiest one for me. Over. Bo Nix is pretty darn polished for a true freshman. He's been doing this for a long, long time, studying under dad, Pat Nix, and being a student of the game. But it is his first time in Tiger Stadium. And I know he's played in the Swamp. That's pretty darn good preparation. At number two, LSU is a different animal. And I think that Dave Aranda is going to throw the kitchen sink at him. I think there could be some boom or bust potential for LSU's defense there. The bust being that LSU's defense probably will give up a couple of really big plays. And if Malzahn, some of that trickery, catches LSU in the wrong type of motion or blitz or whatever, yeah, I could see a 50, 60-yard play or two going for a touchdown. That could happen, but there's the boom part of that quotient as well. And I think that LSU, with Derek Stingley, Christian Fulton, Grant Delpit, who, by the way, looked a lot more like, you know, Grant Delpit against Mississippi State, I could see the Tigers causing two or three cough-ups from Auburn's offense in this game. So, Clint, we agree Burrow goes over 350. We agree the LSU defense causes at least two turnovers. We disagree on Terrace Marshall. I'll take the under. You're on the over. So marinate on that. No calls yet. That's fine. You're getting ramped up on a football Friday. We got some time on the other side of this break. We can take your calls. I also plan to get into the Saints. Not just the injury updates, but how about Patrick Peterson coming back from suspension and drawing the assignment of Michael Thomas? Yeah, I'm here for it, and I bet you are as well. So we'll take a brief timeout, then we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Saints looking to bring home another W back in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. They've got a noon kickoff against not the Dirty Birds, but those Desert Birds. The Arizona Cardinals coming to town, and that means after a six-game suspension, PP7 turned PP21, Patrick Peterson is back. And how interesting that one of the game's absolute best wide receivers, who's been just running amok, hasn't particularly mattered, at least over the last three or four games, after Teddy Two Gloves got some seasoning, hasn't really mattered that Breeze has been absent. Bridgewater, instructed wisely, probably by Breeze, damn it, just throw it to 13. He's that good. And so we've got a matchup brewing that should be really special. Michael Thomas, Patrick Peterson, how much will that affect the ball game? Yeah, I've got some thoughts on it. You probably do as well. Let me know. 706-0111. While we wait on some of those thoughts on a coveted wide receiver, lead corner matchup, how about an injury report? I told you in the last segment, Drew Brees, according to Sean Payton, he's limited but will have a good plan. Store that in your back pocket. I'll come back to it. The full report lists Brees, Alvin Kamara as limited. Don't forget, Kamara was upgraded to limited status yesterday. He remained there. And today, defensive back JT Gray upgraded to limited as well. Will Gray be able to join the likes of Eli Apple, who also was a bit dinged up this week? Might be a game time decision. Also, Jared Cook, tight end, Traquan Smith, wide receiver, and P-Rob, Patrick Robinson, DB, none of them practice today. I think it's very safe to rule out all three of those. And with Cook out, that feeds a little bit into my Patrick Peterson, Michael Thomas quandary. So we'll connect those dots momentarily. But, Clint, here's what I'm thinking. Brees and Kamara are both listed as limited. There are no head games being played by the Saints on the behalf of Alvin Kamara. I don't think he's going to play, and I'm not sure that anybody needs to worry their little heads about that one. but I've gotten my head in a tiffy about this whole Drew Brees thing. My gut continues to tell me, as I said in the last segment, that he's not going to play. And we might be able to read into what Sean Payton said. He's limited, but we'll have a good plan. You know what I think the good plan is?
What's that?
Start and ride the guy who's won the last five games.
That's great.
I think that's the good plan.
That's a great plan, actually. You have the guy that's wound up winning five straight. And that kind of brings up a different question. Of course, this is purely hypothetical. But if, you know, let's say Teddy Bridgewater was 3-2 or 2-3, let's just put it that way, right down the middle, would you want to be more inclined to start Breeze in that kind of situation?
Yes, if he's showing the type of progress that reportedly he has with his rehab.
Okay.
So, again, there are always factors. And I think on its surface, when we were all looking at the possibility of 6 weeks missed and then the bye week, everybody said, okay, find a way to get this thing to 4-4.
Yeah.
Maybe even 5-3. Holy hell, pie in the sky would be 5-3.
Yeah.
Remember way back when we said that?
Exactly.
And so now there's an opportunity for 7-1, and the worst case scenario is 6-2. That's why everybody, at least on this program, has been so definitive in saying there's no reason for number 9 to suit up. Seriously, don't even put the pads on. Don't even put a jersey on. Keep doing the little, you know, thumb war Olympics on the sideline. Tell Bridgewater whatever he needs to. And let's just get to the bye week. So, yes, to answer your question, if the Saints, just for example, Clint, if they were 3-4 right now, and he has shown the type of progress that he reportedly has, dude, I think he's starting and playing on Sunday.
Yeah.
In a must-win type of ball game. Because if you go into the bye week at 3-5, look, I don't care that Atlanta's been horrible this year, and that's who you supposedly are going to get to feast on, not once, but twice, down the stretch of this regular season. You can't go in at 3-5. You know the type of pressure that would put on any franchise right now?
Yeah.
So for me, the fact that they've been winning, yeah, it changes this thing completely. It's great that he's ahead of the curve with rehab, but don't rush him back for this ball game. Hey, to my other point, Patrick Peterson on Michael Thomas. Those two haven't matched up in a game where Peterson traveled on Thomas yet. I think we can expect that to be the case on Sunday. And nobody in the league's got fresher legs right now than Peterson after serving the 6-game suspension. The question becomes this. If Peterson is able to take away some of Thomas's productivity, he ain't going to wipe him out like Lattimore has been doing to Cats this year. He ain't going to Lattimore on Amari Cooper, Michael Thomas. That ain't happening.
Yeah.
But if he's able to relatively limit the productivity of number 13, how does that affect the ball game? Well, if you couple that, Clint, with the fact that Jared Cook almost certainly is going to be out. He didn't practice again today.
He's ruled out.
He has been ruled out?
Yes.
All right. Take out Cook. Thomas, not as productive. Take out Kamara, I would imagine. Then what happens for Teddy? The number one answer to that question is Latavius Murray. Pound the rock. You brought in Latavius Murray to supplement and take some carries away from Alvin Kamara. But in life without Kamara for a couple of weeks while you're trying to get him back healthy, pound the rock. This guy took a beating as an every down back, first for the Vikings, then for the Raiders. He's done this before. Not saying he was one of the league's best, but you gave him 30-plus touches last week. He scored multiple touchdowns. That was Chicago on the road. This is Arizona at home. I think it's time to lean on Latavius Murray. I also think it's time that Ted Ginn Jr. earns the money, and I think you've got an opportunity to spread the wealth, especially in the red zone, to new red zone target. Taysom Hill, number 7, has been dynamite down there.
He's been dynamite in there. I think now you're going to start really trying to utilize Taysom Hill a lot more than you have the last like 5-6 weeks. Now that you know that you've got Drew Brees and he more likely than not will be ready after the bye week whenever you start kind of the second half of your season when it comes to New Orleans Saints, I think you need to do that to be able to establish some things and make sure you get that momentum going. And I have to agree with you on a lot of those points, mainly Latavius Murray. Show me what he can really do by being kind of that bell cow and be the Mark Ingram type that we really signed him up for.
It's interesting that, you know, physically he's different than Ingram, and he's got a different style of game too. Ingram, for my money, was still a better pass catcher. We got to see a lot more of Ingram in pass protection situations as well. I think he excelled in both of those areas. But this guy Murray, he's more than just a short yardage goal line type of back. He gave some real film that people are going to have to consider. First up, the Arizona Cardinals after what he did in Chicago last week. All right, only a two-hour show today as Clint and I lead you into our live coverage of the Astros. That'll begin at 6, Game 3 of the World Series. Annabelle Sanchez, Zach Greinke, first pitch at 7:08 from D.C. And so that makes us halfway home, almost halfway home. We'll get there at the end of this hour with one final word.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Undefeated, and on a couple of fronts. Who would have thought Teddy Bridgewater has a chance to go undefeated through his time as a starter, moving into the bye week without Breeze? He'll have that opportunity to close it out this Sunday against the Cardinals. And LSU, with the win over Auburn, will have beaten three top 10 teams and will go undefeated into the second bye week of the Tigers season before a matchup with Alabama. Again, they have that opportunity to remain undefeated tomorrow. But in both cases, really is truly remarkable. Undefeated, the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back and bringing Justin Vincent with us. Stick around for more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll into our second and final hour of the day and the week. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And just think, this time tomorrow, we'll be well into the second half of LSU-Auburn. We'll continue to preview that big battle of SEC West Tigers right now. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. He is a development officer for the Tiger Athletic Foundation, former LSU great Justin Vincent. JV, happy Friday. How goes it?
Good, man. How are you?
Life is good here. I'll get your 2 cents. What impresses you about Gus Malzahn through the years and what he brings to the table offensively?
I mean, obviously, Gus is a well-rounded offensive coordinator. He does a lot of special things, a lot of smoke and mirrors that sometimes, but he puts his playmakers in position to make a lot of plays, and he's been doing that successfully for a while now.
How much do you think he leans on Bo Nix in this game? I know he's a true freshman. He's been tested in a couple of big-time atmospheres, and he's been a student of the game for so long as the son of somebody who played at Auburn.
Yeah, I think he's going to put him in position to be successful early. I think, you know, we've seen Auburn run, take a deep shot, run. I think, you know, if the weather holds up, which I don't think it will, they're going to have to run the heck out of the football and kind of make him one-dimensional. I think he's a good passer, but he's not a great passer. But he does so much with his legs and creates plays and moves around the pocket. He was able to get out of some duress and complete some balls down the field. So I think that'll be kind of their game plan moving forward.
I'm so glad you brought up the weather. Justin Vincent, our guest on 103.7 The Game. I'm sure as a running back that you were licking your chops in a situation like this, but how does that affect the game plan and something you've worked on all week long for either side, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's something that you hate to see that change the game plan, but when you have confidence in the running backs and that group and the offensive line and you kind of put it on their shoulders saying, hey, we're going to have to grind it out for as long as possible, maybe the whole game. But, you know, give us some room, give us a push. You know, the play calling is always better when it's second and five or third and five than instead of, you know, third and 10 or third and eight. So, you know, I think those young men know what's at stake and the opportunity that they have on Saturday. I think they'll do a good job.
As for LSU, I can't imagine that Ensminger and Brady are going to slow down the passing game. But with the possibility of a soggy Tiger Stadium field, does it change the type of passing game? Does it maybe become a little less vertical, a little quicker?
No, I don't think so. You know, I don't think those guys may change too much, man. I think, you know, obviously the optics, you kind of look at it, you think that would kind of be the kind of the telltale sign with the weather and try to create some mismatch as far as, you know, crossing routes and maybe some digs and, you know, every now and then take a shot deep. But I don't think they'll change too much, man. I think we may slow the pace down a little bit to limit what they do offensively because they can't strike fast. They got a couple players in their team, especially one, that can really roll. So I think that'll be their approach with that.
How much do you expect the return of Terrace Marshall will impact this passing game and maybe some of the options that Joe Burrow has?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, they'll insert him early. I think he'll be in there the first couple of series, you know, see how he feels. But then after that, I think if he feels good, it's going to be, you know, kind of to the wall with him. They do whatever they want. He's somebody who I think we miss dearly, especially in the red zone. But not taking anything away from Justin or Jamar because obviously they've been outstanding, but he's been our red zone threat from game one. And I think getting him back in the fold will add a different dynamic to the offense. It gives us an opportunity to do some things differently a little bit.
Talking LSU football with Justin Vincent. He's our go-to every Friday at 5 o'clock. And our go-to when we're talking running backs, I've heard some comparisons. This freshman, I know you love him, Ty Davis Price. I've heard comparisons, Davis Price to Jeremy Hill in terms of running style, in terms of size. Certainly you were there when Jeremy came through the turnstiles. You like that comparison?
Yeah, I mean, but obviously, you know, those two young men are huge at the running back position as far as the stature. They're both, you know, 225, 230, can run, deceptive speed. Doesn't really look like they can move laterally that good, but they have explosive power. And I like his one cutting down the hill type of approach. I think early on, when he first got a couple carries here and there, he was trying to do too much and hit a home run. I think he's letting it come to him. He feels comfortable now. I think he has a better understanding of what they're asking him to do. He doesn't have to go out there. This is the Southern Lab. He doesn't have to go out there and, you know, create miracles. He just has to do what the play gives him. And I think he's doing a great job of that.
On defense, Justin, I feel like I saw the Grant Delpit that I remember, especially from last year in that Mississippi State game. For your money, what was different for Delpit?
I think he just kind of got back to himself, man. You know, kind of go back to – I was listening to Ryan Clark talk on Matt Moscona's show the other day, and he kind of said, you know, how he – you know, the noise has kind of died down a little bit with all the expectations coming in early on, and I think he's gotten comfortable now. The noise has kind of went away a little bit. He can get back to playing football. You don't have to worry about anything. And I think sometimes, you know, when you get all those accolades, you know, especially preseason, it kind of goes to you a little bit. But I think this is the Grant Delpit that we know, and I think we'll continue to see him throughout the season.
So many great LSU-Auburn games through the years. I know the ones that you had in Baton Rouge, by and large, went LSU's way. Some of those on the road left a really bad taste in everybody's mouth. I'll get your remembrance, especially when you went to Jordan-Hare, just – how bitter was that, especially knowing what happened with Ronnie Prude, early Doucette, just a house of horrors for a couple of years there?
Yeah, man, you know, obviously the history of those guys is really, really long. And but the stuff with Ronnie Prude when they creating rules and on the spot, you know, with the catapulting and all this other stuff, and then the pass interference call that should have been on early, you know, it just changes everything, man. But, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes. You know, you just got to kind of fight through those things. But you know, sometimes, you know, you need things to be, you know, the obvious things to be called to give yourself a fighting chance because, I mean, obviously they're two great teams. And, you know, with you know that team they had back in the day, they have Jason Campbell, Ronnie Brown, Cadillac, Carlos Rogers. I mean, they had a lot of guys who can play and they played at the next level. So, you know, when you're playing a team like that, you know, you want the playing field to be fair and optimal and for you guys to have success. But those penalties that were called on us were egregious, and it was terrible to have the game end that way.
I'm certain that when you communicate with those guys that were brothers on the field with you, they're probably still close friends now. Justin, I'm certain that it's more about your families and life, but be honest, do those type of games, do those type of moments ever come up from you guys still?
Yeah, all the time, man. I joke with Ronnie Prude all the time. Never necessarily about Auburn, but I joke with him about the Iowa game against Drew Tate and them. Whenever he ran in the field late and didn't cover the guy running the vertical and he scored a touchdown with 10 seconds left. So I kind of joke with him about that. But yeah, I mean that's all a part of growing up and being a ball player and just you know, making those long-lasting relationships that, you know, when guys come in town, I looked at the list earlier today. I mean, Skylar Green's going to be here, Ryan Miller, you know, Troy Twilley, and some of the guys I didn't play with. But there's just this atmosphere is going to be unbelievable. And I want them to make it as memorable as possible for Bo Nix after that comment he made.
I can't imagine what was going through his head with that as well. Comparing a game in Jerry World against Oregon, what is that?
That's 50-50. It's 50 years. Probably more people for Auburn travel than Oregon, I'm supposed. So for him to even make that statement, it's kind of asinine because, kid, you have no idea what you are in for the next 4 years of your career. You know, at least two for sure because you're going to be back here. But he is, I don't know, man. When I read the statement, I was like, somebody must have misquoted it. Let me go double check and look at some other sites. But no, everybody word for word on the team.
What's amazing, so, I'll tell you what's amazing about that to me. He could have just as easily said, well, I just quarterbacked a game in the swamp. That would have at least had some validity.
Yeah, but he said Jerry's World. He didn't even give the Gators their credit, what credit is due. So, yeah, I'm a little bit weary of any game that comes out of his mouth right now.
Justin, you're the best for doing this, man. Enjoy the ball game. Get the poncho. Stay dry. We'll talk soon.
All right, man. Thanks. Bye.
The great Justin Vincent, development officer for the Tiger Athletic Foundation. Pretty darn good follow on Twitter as well, at JVincent25. And he's good on matters like the one he just discussed. I knew to tee him up a little bit, right? About the atmosphere, Bo Nix, because he went in on Nix on Twitter. That's one of the fun parts of social media. As we'll tell you in the next 20 minutes, there are some other parts that are pretty entertaining, as well. Twitter, a good reminder of what happens on sports television, because we can't always watch everything all the time. And when Charles Barkley sounds off, yep, you better believe we are here for it. So we have that throwing shade at 5:30. Josh Fontenot coming aboard, talking Southside Sharks football. At 5:45, they scored a big win last night over Lafayette High. I believe it's enough to get the first-year varsity program playoffs eligible. But coming up on the other side of this break, we've got an Astros starting lineup for Game 3 of the World Series. I'll get that to you, and we'll talk about the weekend in college football. Plenty of show to go. So after this brief timeout, we'll bounce right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And back in with a little Astros flavor to kick in your ear. To say this one is a must-win game, CD, I think would be the understatement of the year. And I know we're about 10 months into this bad boy. Astros have to have this. You can't go down 3-0 into a game where it's almost certainly going to be Jose Holstaff, even though Jose Urquidy starting to accrue some favor, I think, in his corner. People like what he's doing. He's become somebody that, you know, without Wade Miley, as was kind of expected, without Lance McCullers, who's been out all year, maybe it would work with Urquidy and company. It only works if you're down 2-1, and you have an opportunity to bring back Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander for games 5 and 6. And so here's how the Astros are going to line it up. A.J. Hinch put out his card within the last hour. Here's your 1-9. Again, first pitch, 7:08, live from the nation's capital. Clint and I are bringing you to the pregame show at 6 o'clock. It's a National League ballpark. That means no DH, so you'll notice that there is no Yordan Alvarez that'll be listed here. Springer will lead off and play center. Altuve will bat second, play second. Brantley in the three-hole playing left field. Bregman still struggling at the plate by and large in these playoffs. Will be cleanup and play in the hot corner. Gurriel will bat fifth and play first. Correa, shortstop, batting sixth. And these next two, really, is where it's been just a black hole of productivity lately. Josh Reddick will bat seventh and play in right. Robinson Chirinos catching an eighth, and then Zach Greinke pitching tonight. Again, it's an NL ballpark, Clint, so he'll bat. That's actually a good thing. And I actually might bet money that Greinke has as many hits, if not more, as Reddick and Chirinos combined tonight.
That's a little appreciate there, Ben.
You may appreciate a fact that I just threw at you. So Greinke can swing the stick. Reddick has been an absolute travesty in this lineup lately. I know what he brings you in the outfield. I know it's hard to pull the trigger on making a lineup switch this late in the game, but my faith in 7-8, those two holes right now, you might want to dig and bury those two.
Exactly. It's going to be a tough road for them. But, man, I'm just looking forward to seeing what's going to happen tonight. Because you need to win this one, because tomorrow you brought it up perfectly how it's likely going to be Jose Holstaff. I mean, the Nationals have already shown their hand for Game 4, and I believe they're going to be starting Patrick Corbin, a guy who wound up looking really good in Game 1, those late innings.
That's a strong move, and Corbin's got an awful lot of rest. Speaking of rest, our good friend Allison Footer mentioned it yesterday. Shame on me, I don't have the exact number, but I believe it's been 14 or 15 days since the last start for tonight's starter for the Washington Nationals. And I'll help me out here. Annabelle Sanchez. Almost a fortnight. That's a word, by the way, that used to mean more than just a video game. So, yeah, it's been a long time since he took the bump. But the big thing here, no Yordan Alvarez. I do think that's the right call. An inexperienced fielder could hurt you more than the potential of what his bat might bring you. So I expected this in the NL ballparks, but no Alvarez tonight.
I'm not surprised either. I mean, the guy has definitely proven himself to be an AL Rookie of the Year candidate. Probably is going to lock that down in my mind. But when you move into an NL park, a lot of crazy things can happen. So I'm not surprised by the move at all either.
All right, I do want to get into college football. Again, we're throwing shade in the next segment. Chuck Barkley can come on down. And then Josh Fontenot, Southside High, will join us at 5:45. But we do have a pretty good slate of ball games. Cousin Dino and I pick spreadheads every Wednesday, and usually we're trying to polish a turd a little bit. Don't mind telling you that. It's hard to find five really good ball games in college football. And we don't just pick games that we like to pick. We actually pick the marquee games. You've got a lot of options. I'm going to share some with you, and each of these, with one exception, has a team involved that could confront LSU's chase toward the college football playoff. Let's begin with what I think will be the game of the day. And you better wake up, because it starts at 11 a.m. Number 13, Wisconsin. At number 3, Ohio State. 14.5-point spread for the Buckeyes in the shoe. It's kind of like LSU-Auburn in the sense that, well, it's a top 13 matchup. It is an in-conference game. It's actually, I believe, an in-district game. And yet still, big spread for the team that's at home and a little more highly ranked. I love Wisconsin's chances to cover here. I think Jonathan Taylor might just be the best back in all of college football. But beating Justin Fields and the Ohio State University at home, probably too tall of an order. But continue to monitor these things, LSU fans, because there are a few things that are at play here. Combine that game I just shared with you, Wisconsin at Ohio State, with number 6 Penn State at Michigan State. Combine those two together into the Big Ten. Here's why. The chances of getting two in from the SEC ride solely on one of the three Power 5 conferences I'm about to share with you not getting a team in. The Pac-12 has already canceled itself out. Delete! And they've already deleted themselves. Take the Pac-12 out. The three that we're going to continue to look at are the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the ACC. The ACC's only hope, Princess Leia style, is Clemson. And by the way, they are 34. Actually, you know what? It was an error, Clint, but we're going to leave it. They are 34 point favorites against Boston College. The Eagles are terrible. That game's going to be 34. So, yeah, Clemson, if they continue to win, they're in. They lose a single game between now and the second weekend of December, they're out. I don't care if they lose a game in the regular season and win the ACC title. Clemson loses a game and they're out. But that's the only thing that could keep the ACC from getting a team in. As far as the Big 12 is concerned, their horse is Oklahoma. And Boomer Sooner is on the road at Kansas State on Saturday. They're 23.5-point favorites. I think Oklahoma's got a darn good shot to get to the Big 12 title game, beat Texas again, and get in. I will maintain the most likely conference to miss out on getting a team in is the Big 10. If they can cannibalize themselves a little bit. And so right now, Ohio State, with a loss to Wisconsin, they've still got to take on. Ohio State does Penn State at some point in this regular season. There's a chance that all these teams can step on each other and do to themselves what the SEC does just about every single year. And so the SEC's best chance at getting two in, I'll continue to tell you, you may think it's Oklahoma losing, Clemson losing. I just don't know how likely those scenarios are. The Big Ten beating each other, the best beating up on each other, that's actually feasible. And one more opportunity comes this weekend. Ohio State, the ball is in your court. I know that's a basketball reference, but you know what I'm driving at.
Exactly, and we've seen it in the last few weeks. We talk about 11 a.m. games. Those are where kind of the stranger things have happened. And you look at a couple weeks ago, the Georgia-South Carolina game, if I'm not mistaken, the Wisco game last week where they wound up losing the way that they did.
Wisco, nice.
Yeah, that was an 11 a.m. game as well.
You could say Wisco, but I can't say Appy State. Okay.
I mean, I'm sure you App State is the preferred nomenclature there, Ben.
It's funny that we went down this road because that's the other top 25 game that I did want to touch on briefly. Number 21 and undefeated App State is on the road at USA South Al. South Al's terrible this year.
They're bad.
They are 1-6. That makes App State 27-point favorites on the road in a Sun Belt Conference game. Why do I bring them up? Not just because the Cajuns might well encounter the Mountaineers again in Boone for the second straight year, Sun Belt Conference title action. The chances of App State being a New Year's Six Bowl contender, CD, I think are very, very high right now. Again, Cajuns fans won't want to hear this, so earmuff it for a moment, but let's just talk objective facts. They're 6-0 undefeated.
Yep.
They won in North Carolina, which has been ranked at some point this season. If they end up getting two wins over the Raging Cajuns and they're undefeated, Clint, App State's going to play on January the 1st.
And I would agree with you wholeheartedly, especially you bring it up. You brought up the North Carolina game. They could be dominating all of Carolina in 3 weeks' time. On November the 9th, while everybody's going to be talking about LSU-Alabama, App State, South Carolina, that's going to loom large.
Ooh. It is, eyeballs emoji reference that you just made
yes.
there. Eyeballs pop out a little bit with that. If they take down both of the Kakalakas and they beat UL twice, they're absolutely going to play on January 1st.
They'll be secured for that.
I mean, Houston's been there in recent years. UCF continues to get to those type of games. App State's going to end up playing a big-time Power 5 opponent whose fan base is going to say, we're screwed. We're kind of darned if we do, darned if we don't. We're playing a team we're supposed to beat. The attendance isn't going to be great, and they might just sneak up on somebody like UCF did. Well, not LSU in the Fiesta Bowl, but Auburn in the Peach Bowl a couple of years back. All right, we're halfway through our 5 o'clock hour. We've been college football heavy in our opening 30 minutes of this 5 o'clock frame. I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I want to get into not only throwing shade, but a pretty darn cool milestone that was set by a local high school football standout. I'll get to that when we return. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more of the good stuff. Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
NBC Sports Radio Update starts now.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
We're coming down the stretch, but right back in with more of the good stuff. And we've got some great stuff coming before you know it. Within the next, say, 10, 12 minutes, Josh Fontenot, head football coach at Southside High. His Sharks had a big win last night, a definitive win, scored 60-plus in beating Lafayette High. I believe that now makes them playoff-bound in their debut varsity season. So we'll get to the latest from Fear the Fin Country as we close out our program. Before I throw shade, something that I readily admit to you every day I love to do, it's kind of an obsession, maybe even a compulsion, an addiction. This is pretty darn cool. This is the opposite of throwing shade. This is just having all kinds of adulation for somebody. Earlier today, Saints head football coach Sean Payton, and yeah, we've talked some Saints today, but we didn't share this with you. Sean Payton told the media, and here's some context, he was asked about crowd noise in the dome when LSU has a night game and the Saints kick off at noon. That won't be the case this weekend. LSU-Auburn, obviously, at 2:30. But that's the context. The exact response from Sean Payton, we've got to get our Bloody Marys going. That's just self-awareness of the state of Louisiana and phenomenal humor slash reality, because they're one and the same, from Sean Payton here. So the guy's just clicking on all cylinders when it comes to calling plays on the sideline. No Drew Brees, no Alvin Kamara, no problem. And apparently, when LSU plays a night game in Tiger Stadium, no big deal there either. We just got to get our Bloody Marys going. And then the Dome Patrol, not the early 90s defense, the dudes that are crazy, the gals that are crazy in the stands, they'll get going, after they've had a few of the tomato-based vodka drinks. Just something to maybe consider. And something that I'll remind you about. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Don't believe me? Go to their website. You'll see. It's patiocenter.com, and that's where you'll find the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, the standing seam metal awnings, and so much more. But know that those are just starting points. Mark and the crew at Patio Center, they're going to sit down with you, help you create a vision, and then fulfill that bad boy. Maybe even before the Super Bowl, before Sean Payton gets everybody's Bloody Mary game going. It wouldn't that be something? But believe me on this, the pros at Patio Center, they want to up your patio game. Again, it starts with a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's truly never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
The NBA season is all of like 3 nights old, and already Charles Barkley has come from off the top rope. Seriously, he couldn't contain himself for more than just 3 nights. They were doing the game, the TNT crew, live from Oracle Arena last night. Golden State, coming off of umpteen straight trips to the NBA Finals. Didn't win it last year against Toronto, but certainly that has been an unprecedented run, at least since Shaq and Kobe hung it up together in La La Land. And I'm about to play a clip of the Shade Barkley through, and it's pretty standard Chuck Wagon stuff. But what makes this ultimate primo shade material, you have to know that injured Warriors forward Klay Thompson is part of the booth. They're doing this, mind you, inside of Oracle Arena. It's the normal setup. Kenny the Jet Smith, Chris Webber, Ernie Johnson, Chuck, and then, boom, Klay Thompson. So they're having a healthy back and forth. At least they were until Charles said this.
Number one, I hope you get back soon, but you're just wrong.
What is he wrong about?
Well, I think they won the Shet.
Why?
Well, because I don't think they can score enough. I want to make my other prediction, and I was wrong before the game.
Mm-hmm.
I said they were going to be the 7-8 seed. They're not going to make the playoffs because they just can't score enough. You know,
you can tell after one half of basketball.
Yes. Playing with the best defensive team, the Clippers.
No, but not just that, Candace. You know, when you look at your team, you say, okay, Steph can get me 30. D'Angelo can get me 20. But Draymond, even though he's a heck of a player, he only going to get me 15. That's not enough in the Western Conference this year.
Well, damn, Charles. Just tell him how you feel. Right to his face. The dynasty's over. You can't score enough. One half of basketball. Always admired the chutzpah from that guy. But, yeah, that might just be a little hasty, Charles.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Charles, Chuck, the Chuck Wagon. Might as well throw in the Chuckster. It's like me and him are boys. I call him just about whatever I want. So always fun to throw some shade. Tip of the cap to our friends at Patio Center. Before we hit our final break of the program, and before we bring on Josh Fontenot of the Southside High Sharks, how about another preppy note? And this is darn impressive. In last night's 41-0 win, STM over Northside, Caleb Holstein officially became the most prolific passer in the history of STM Cougars football. He now has more touchdown passes, more passing yardage than anyone to ever do it. He's 6'5", 215, heading to Harvard next year, which is impressive in its own right. But Holstein, 2017 through 2019, is now ahead of Brandon Bergeron, William Bellamy, Jamie Howard, and Nate Cox. And that's the order that those guys stand in when it comes to both yards and touchdowns. Here's what's interesting. Holstein, 89 touchdowns to only 18 interceptions, and that yardage total through the air is now up to 79-35. and the point should be made, possibly 5 games left for Caleb to continue to add to that haul. So congrats go out to Caleb Holstein. Yeah, that thing was floated out earlier today, and it's certainly treading water. That is a very impressive group. A lot of recent quarterbacks. The game has changed. Shane Savoy is a genie that's out of his bottle. He is granting big-time passing wishes to everyone who comes through lately, including Bellamy, Cox and company, Bergeron, but even to surpass Jamie Howard at his big-time company. Congrats to Caleb Holstein. All right, we will take our final timeout, but trust that we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in one final time on a Friday. Hey, we don't have football night in Acadiana. I know it's waterlogged outside. We played just about all of our high school football last night, but prep football, as you know, will live on this program and on our station. And with that, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. His Southside High Sharks scored a huge win last night, 63-35, the final over Lafayette High. Josh Fontenot, our guest, and coach, your team now 5-3. What a debut season it's been for the Sharks. Great to have you here.
Thank you, man. Always like talking to y'all. Appreciate it.
Give me a little bit of the insight from last night. Obviously, the ball game was already scheduled for a Thursday, and certainly your offense came ready to play. 63 points. How'd you climb that high?
Just one of those nights it was clicking. I mean, we had a quick start, scored on the first play of the game, and then Lafayette High fumbled, and then two more plays we scored again. So I think it was 14-0 with a minute and 1 second gone. So it was just a night where everything kind of clicked. The defense really played well, got us some stops, and we're able to convert on them pretty fast. So I think it was 49-7.5, and when you have it kind of going, it's a good feeling. The boys are excited.
You started District 3-5A play with games at Barb versus Acadiana, at Sulphur, and at Sam Houston. If that doesn't prepare a team, I'm not sure what will. So I guess what lessons did your team take out of that, and what did you think of the Sharks as you made your way through that gauntlet early in district play?
Well, it was when we looked at the schedule originally, you kind of like shook your head, like, you know, wow, you know, how, you know, starting first five games against Barbara and Acadiana. But then when you look back at it and you started an analyzer and said, well, if we're going to get ready to play at this level, why not start with those guys and learn all those lessons? We probably weren't ready to win those games yet anyway. And we played a lot better in Barb than I thought maybe we were ready to play. And then Acadiana is just a different animal. Acadiana is amazing. They're probably the best, if not the second best football team I've ever seen. So the lessons that you learn from it is, okay, this is the level that you have to play at. This is how fast the game is. This is the level of intensity. These are where your mistakes are magnified. So as it went, we got a little better. We played pretty good against Sulphur, and we actually played pretty decent against Sam Houston after the first quarter. And then you get to where you're playing Lafayette High, and you've prepared. You've gone through the gauntlet. You know what the best teams in the district look like. And then Lafayette High is a good team, too. So the thing about it, there was no more surprises for us. We've been through a power offense. We've been through a couple spread offenses and two different defenses on each end of those things. So we had kind of seen it all, and it just kind of came together. We finally played a complete game against Lafayette.
Coach Josh Fontenot, the Southside High Sharks, our guest on 103.7 The Game. And I'll remember you telling me off air, this was late August, Coach, we haven't done anything yet. A lot of people excited, and I want them to be, but let's calm down because we haven't done anything yet. Now you're 5-3. You've got games at Como versus Nish to finish the regular season, a chance to win 6, maybe 7 games in your debut season. Do you feel as if this team has accomplished maybe more than you expected?
I guess that's fair. You know, whenever we started, like I said, we didn't know. We were so focused on just trying to beat Northside, and then we did that, and then were able to win the next two, so you started 3-0 and then win a district game at Sulphur, win another one against Lackett High. Yeah, you know, our expectations, we thought we had a chance to do well. But like I said, it would be unfair for me to say, yeah, I knew you could do this. No, I didn't. I didn't know. I didn't know what we could do because we had never done anything at this level before. So I'm happy with where we're at. You know, never going to be satisfied until we win them all. But I think for the process that we're in, for us not to say, okay, we're doing okay, I think that would be unfair as well. The boys worked hard. They've trained well enough to be successful. And then we've actually been able to go out and execute it a few times. So with the point we're at right now, I feel pretty good.
As for your quarterback, Dylan Monette, where has he taken the biggest leaps during this season? You know he was good coming in, but for him to keep, I guess, guiding your offense toward these huge offensive outbursts, how has he improved the most?
I think the thing the most is that he's really starting to understand the offense as a whole. There was a couple times last night where he did some things where they weren't exactly scripted, but it ended up being touchdowns. And he noticed an alignment or the way a coverage was moving, and he took advantage of it. And those were things at the beginning of the year where it wasn't quite there yet, which was fine. You know, you got to play in it before you can really get to know it. So last night he showed the ability to, if teams are going to give us something and it may not be a primary receiver or the first read that we have, if they give us something and he sees pre-snap, he's starting to be able to pick that out and go to it without me having to, okay, come back to the sideline and say, all right, next time we do this, go do it. He's taking advantage of it immediately. Those are the things right there that are starting to make him even better as a quarterback. Throwing the ball, all the physical tools, no problem, but he's really starting to think like a quarterback now, and that really is good for us.
Your team, as I mentioned, put up a crooked number on the scoreboard last night, but I do have to get your reaction to that Acadiana and Sam Houston ball game. Coach, how do you go over 80? And that's a team that's running the veer. Talk to me about 82-41.
It just shows you how good they are. I mean, they are. They're amazing. I've never seen a team that's so good at what they do. You know, when we played them, I honestly thought we were closer than that. And maybe on a different night we were, but they're so good at what they do. They're so confident in it. The backs are amazing. Everything they do is great. And then now, you know, their defense it doesn't get as much attention because of the offensive firepower they have, but that defense is as good as anything we've seen and anything I've seen in a long time. They're an amazing team, man. And I'm pulling for them. Team from my district, I want them to go win the whole thing. Wish them luck. But, yeah, 82, that's impressive. Somebody told me last night that both Dylan Monette had the exact same yardage and the exact same amount of touchdowns at halftime, which I thought was pretty neat. I don't know. Just stuff like that kind of intrigued me. So I thought that was a pretty neat stat.
That's wild. And look, I'm a pretty superstitious guy as well. Go kind of philosophically with me here, Coach, as we're visiting with Josh Fondo at Southside High. What's harder to prepare for, again, just kind of in general? Is it a veer attack like Acadiana, or is it that wide-open spread passing attack from Sam Houston?
I think it's the veer just because we don't do it, you know, and nobody does it. It's just like wing T. It's hard to prepare for because we don't do anything like that, and it's hard to simulate it. When we played practice for Acadiana, we got two kids hurt during practice preparing for them just to try to be as physical as them.
Wow.
And then you can't simulate the speed at which they hit it. It's just super hard to prepare for. You would think it'd be the other way around. It looks more sophisticated, but when you really get in the guts of what they're doing on the veer and everything, their blocking schemes and the way they do things, it's extremely complex and extremely sophisticated. They have an answer for everything that you try to do to them. They've seen it all, you know, so you're not going to fool Acadiana by getting in a different front or slanting or twisting a different way. They've seen all of that stuff, and they're so good at doing it. You got to be on the game against a spread team like Sam Houston, which is extremely hard because of their talent, but we see that all the time. You know, we feel more comfortable adjusting to that. You know, sometimes the guys that Sam Houston has, man, they're impressive. And they do what they do well. I still think It's just, we talk about it all the time. You know, who's the, we always say, who's the only team that can beat Southside? And we say it's Southside. And the whole point behind that is, if you do take care of you and take care of yourself and worry about what you have to worry about and execute your offense and defense, you're going to put yourself in a pretty good position to win. Acadiana, I think, has the same thing. If they do what they do better than you do what you do, most of the time they're going to win, and that's kind of how they win games.
Big game coming up for your team, an opportunity to get to 6-3. It'll be at Como a week from tonight. Coach, before I let you go, clear something up with me. I know that Mike Boyer and Turlings Catholic have lent their fealty for the regular season, but now that it's becoming clear you will be a postseason team, is that where you would host the playoff game?
If we're lucky enough to host a playoff game, we'll probably have to have that. I hope we have to have that conversation. That's the best I can answer it. I mean, yeah, I hope so.
I know it's TBD, brother, but it really is a cool conversation to have. Again, congratulations. Big win last
Thank
night.
You.
Coach, best of luck. I enjoyed talking with you. Thank you.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Josh Fontenot, think about that. Where would a home playoff game be? Don't know yet. Just elated to have that type of conversation. I'll tell you right now, that game last night, Lafayette, Southside, I think that was for a guaranteed playoff spot. Coach may not say that. I will. That's the way I look at it. Home game against Nish to end the regular season. They're going to be at Como, as I mentioned, a week from tonight. This is a team that's going to finish 6-4 or 7-3, one of the two in my book. They will be playing in the playoffs. They might even have one at home. Where's it going to be? Don't even know. But it's pretty darn cool. All right, only 2 hours today, we understand. It's not our norm, but neither is the situation. With high school football moving around all to Thursday just about, and then the Astros coming up tonight, and boy, is it a biggie. So we need to make way. I do want to thank Steve Wiltfong, our guy JV, Justin Vincent, and you just heard from Josh Fontenot at Southside High. Greinke, Sanchez, Stroh's have to have it. And you will have the pregame show beginning at 6. 7:08 is your first pitch live from Washington, D.C. So for the famous Clint D., my name is Ben Love. Enjoy your weekend. You've been listening to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.